You say that if the Sasquatch phenomenon got scientific attention that it deserves, we would quickly make progress with this.
Well, I mean, they're funded. They're super qualified. Wait, I'm a generalist, you know. But, you know, there's physical anthropology. And I quote a lot of them in the second book. It is, fortunately, other people have called it a scholarly book because I wrote it for them. I mean, it's readable. I'm told it's quite readable. Oh, I think it's very readable. but you know, and I sent them review copies, and I paid for a copyright to use their words, you know. I got no response, which is almost worse than a response that says, I disagree with your interpretation. Great. Tell me why you disagree. Let's have this dialogue. Yeah.
Of nice critique.
Oh, and that's what we lack. Collegial dialogue is so important. And Jeff gets it more. He's in the loop. He's in his university academia there. And I'm not. So
you retired?
No. I always worked on contracts. So I was often between contracts. So I never really knew if I was ever going to retire. Like, I never knew if there was a contract ahead. So I've never been fully employed. My mother would say, you never had a real job, did you, Joe?
Yeah.
No, I never had a real job, Mother. It was always contract.
It's like being an artist.
But no, I'm working harder than ever. I mean, obviously one's not going to bring closure, but, you know, towards the end of one's career, again, it's this obligation. John, don't take on any more new project. Try to start winding up stuff. And that's why I started making these video presentations. I've got about six of them.
On your YouTube.
Yeah, on my website, which apparently is attached to a YouTube channel. I'm not very good at this. So I do these 10, 15 minute kind of synopsis, you know. And basically, they're almost like chapters from the book. But yeah. No, I'm still crazy.
The Discovery of Sasquatch by Dr. Bindernagel. And you wrote this in 2010?
It was published in 2010. Took 7 years
for you to write this book. Okay. Amazing. Well, I would encourage everybody to get this. I'm definitely going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Sasquatch is a great ape.
I was waiting for you to finish, and I was going to jump in. I follow John Green, Grover Kantz, and everything made sense. We're talking about an upright great ape. Grover made a strong case for that. I make a very strong case for it here. I've since backed off. I didn't realize that would be divisive among the investigating community. Oh, no way is this an ape. It's obviously a human. Well, I don't know if it's a human or an ape. So I backed off to basically hominoidea, just calling it a primate. This large group. Humans, apes, just let's not get bogged down in trying to catalog it.
Well, so do you feel like...
I think it's helpful to think... Sorry.
No, it's okay. Sorry.
To be directed into the great ape literature. And I do have a big section here on the great ape hypothesis. If we study great apes, we will say, oh, my goodness.
Well, yeah.
The Sasquatch does this. Oh, my goodness. The Sasquatch has those prominent shoulders. Oh, my goodness. The Sasquatch has that those... well-developed trapezius.
What about
muscle?
The possibility of it being both, though? Because we just saw Thomas Seawood, and he was so adamant on saying that it was a human.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
He kept saying it's a human.
A divergence of human.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm backing off. I mean, right. I don't want to alienate Tom or anyone else, but physical anthropologists, they don't draw that bold line between apes and humans like they used to.
Right.
And then you get into problems with people who have religious problems in calling it an ape. Oh, you know, and then just even comparing humans and apes, which is too bad. Because, I mean, there we have Jane Goodall having done all this great work on apes, showing that, you know, they show compassion, that they have a lot of human-like qualities, you know.
Cultures.
So we have got to get away from this ape as knuckle-dragging brute. And you were talking about intelligence at some point. You just have to go to like orangutans, and you know their dexterity at getting out of cages. I mean,
the things chimpanzees can do with puzzles and memorization.
So, Dr. Bindernagel, so do you feel like ape is not general enough then? Because ape includes humans, obviously. But
well, depending on who you talk to. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. I mean, this is the thing. Well, I mean, you know, Mike Patterson is a good example. And he said, you know, very much this is a human. I said, and I was calling it. And, oh, yeah, he said, no way is it a mammal, John. It's a human. I said, Mike, we humans, I shouldn't be using Mike as an example. We humans are mammals.
We are mammals.
Yeah.
We are.
Oh, apes. Okay then, he says.
Yeah.
But, well, no fault of Mike's, but this is occurring at a level when we should have our scientists online.
Yeah. Just
cutting through the basic zoology.
Yeah.
And not having to keep backing up and offending human, people.
Yeah, offending
people. Needlessly.
Human and ape DNA are two different strands, though, isn't it?
Dr. Meldrum, I can't keep up with DNA, and right. I don't quite have much.
Because from what I've studied, like, I know from some of the things that they've found out in the field, like hair samples and scat and stuff like that, has cut the ones that they have been able to get strand or DNA out of. Those ones have come back as like 70%.
The mitochondrial DNA
that's female
from a Homo sapien female.
Yeah,
like 10,000 years ago.
So, yeah. How do you feel about Ketchum's DNA study?
Do you? I'm not qualified to judge.
Have you looked at it?
No, I mean I read what comes out.
Yeah,
and I wish she didn't sound like she had a chip on her shoulder, because that's offensive to her scientific colleagues and our scientific colleagues. Cause, yeah, people are critical, and you know, anyway, no, I really try to stay away from this because, you know, amongst investigators, amongst scientists, you know, we're just trying to encourage scientific dialogue and discussion, which requires scrutiny of the evidence. And see, I happen to think that there's evidence. Like with DNA and hair, I mean, hair, gee whiz. Some of the stuff that Brian Sykes dealt with there in Oxford in UK, you know, how did it go? Oh, yeah, so many of the samples turned out to be coyote, raccoon. And, well, you take a hair, you put it under the light microscope, and in 10 minutes, and you go through with your comparative guide, looking at it physically. Yeah, this is 1950s science. Old science. Mm-hmm. Very simple. We just screen at the outset. Yeah, get rid of the raccoons. Get rid of the bear sample. Get rid of the cows, you know. And then if there's something left, then you might go to DNA. But, you know,
I didn't know that's how it was.
Well, no, there can be a very early screening.
So, yeah. If you...
Anyway, sorry.
No, it's good. So,
I like that.
What for yourself, like, Leon, listen, I know Sasquatch exists because of five solid scientific things from my angle, yeah. Whatever it happens to be, what would those be? Or even three? So the prints would be obviously one significant.
One of the most compelling pieces of...
For you personally, though, like when you looked at it as a trained educator, well, and you're looking at that saying, this looks pretty solid.
And it's putting stuff together, like, you know, what I've done. And, you know, people object to eyewitness drawings. But, you know, we have... What did John Green have? He finally stopped keeping up his... But over 2,000... eyewitness description. Well, not always description. So I pulled a lot of these together and showed, you know, you got adult males, you got adult females, you got sub-adults. Okay, you can make that case. And then with that, you can do a kind of a generic Sasquatch,
sure.
You know. So, I mean, I think we, and then you compare that with a bear, and there's these really consistent differences, you know. And I don't think we should dismiss eyewitness descriptions quite so out of hand. Anyway, but no, yeah, you're right. It's the tracks are very compelling. The track way is really turning out to be interesting.
How so?
Pardon?
How so?
Ah, well, good question. Two points: long stride and minimal trail width. And I've got a research video on this because we're now up to even in my collection, maybe 6 or 7 good samples of...
Well, they kind of walk like bears, don't they? It's like foot by foot by foot, sort of.
Yeah, what? Did you say like bears?
Yeah, because you know how a bear will walk like hind, like this, and then the Sasquatch trackways are kind of the same way, all the ones I've seen, where they kind of walk.
I didn't know a bear walked like that. In my experience, there is what we call straddle.
Yes.
And I actually went into this in some depth. There is straddle, trail width,
right,
to a bear trail and a human trail, and frequently no straddle or trail width. So I think bears actually, there is some straddle if we study them. Anyway, oh, and then the long stride. I mean, it's just, and then we get into technicalities. Are we talking stride or pace or, anyway, but this very long, beyond human. Anyway, it's what attracts people, saying, oh my goodness, you know, and anyway. The problem, you know, I've done it in the book. I've done it on those research videos, and I you know, I do it at conferences. And the few I go to anymore. But see, my latest, I guess it's a complaint. my
observation.
I got one more thing. I want to
sure.
Show
yeah.
You. Well, can you grab under that mammal book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This thing right here.
Yeah. Have a look at that and pass it around. And, well, grab a couple of them.
Yeah, a couple of
yeah, there's a lot. I'll just show you.
Okay.
Show you. What a cynical old man I'm becoming. Well, I'll probably not becoming, but I'm...
Okay. I'm going to put this down, sir.
You can keep those. You can keep them. Oh, okay. I made a bunch. And...
I want
my grandpa. Yeah, but you know, this was earlier this year. I was quite disappointed to have my paper rejected yet again. And so I made a joke. Okay, I am so desperate. I'm like the guy on the street corner flogging wristwatches, you know.
That's totally funny.
Well, some guys talk pretty about much come to that.
What else can I do? I don't know. Anyway.
Do you have any questions you can ask them, you guys?
John, but in many groups of people, you're highly revered. People talk about you.
Thank you. That's why I love going to these conferences. And someone said, John, you go all the way to Kennewick for a conference? When I go to a Bigfoot conference in the U.S., people come up to me and say, thank you for what you're doing, Dr. Bindranagle. Thank you for coming here. I do not get that in Canada. I just soak that up because it's got to last me all year. No offense, no offense to my countrymen.
One, but, two, three are here, so you're making progress.
And, I feel like it's because up here in Canada, though, like Rio's been so fascinated just with the beaches here and even just the forests themselves and everything. It's just kind of like, I think it's that we're so used to it up here in Canada that it's not as fascinating.
It's Bigfoot or Sasquatch. It's just a cultural thing.
Exactly, yeah.
And this is where anthropologists have picked up this. BC, it used to be when we had social credit and no other province did. BC, the land of Sasquatch and social credit. Mm-hmm. That was actually in a newspaper thing, you know. We did characteristics of BC. Ah, yes. Yeah, and that's the problem. We've allowed it to become that cultural entity.
Yeah.
Even
and so we're unwilling to even consider that there could be a basis for it.
Absolutely.
And we do Aboriginal people a disservice by not considering that, because they led the way.
Yeah.
We simply haven't got it. We haven't listened. We've said, oh, yes, mythical.
And a lot of the people that say that are the ones that, like I've used the term many times this weekend, ignorance, you know, because people aren't... A lot of people who say it doesn't exist are the ones who don't take the time to even put any effort into researching it.
Well, this is the thing. Okay, there is this ignorance. How can we address that ignorance? I keep failing in everything I do, and I don't know what to do anymore. I'm hopeful for these research videos that they will eventually kick in.
But you know, since, you know, for all the decades you've been researching this, you've seen it firsthand how much the Sasquatch population or research population has advanced and grown.
Like I've seen it, yeah.
It's massive. It's massive. Yeah. Like
people I'm not fully aware of that, but I see these conferences like Kennewick, 500 people, you know. Yeah. Johnny Manson, the last time I was there, 700 people through the doors over 3 days.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these are, they're just curious, but that's fine. That's good. Yeah, yeah.
Curiosity is better than nothing. Curiosity leads to
research. That's what's missing from my scientific colleagues. Where is our sense of curiosity? Yeah. Aren't you curious that this thing persists? That people still keep reporting Sasquatches despite the ridicule?
Which is interesting because being a scientist, to me, like, if I was a scientist, I would, that's what my definition of being a scientist would be, is being curious and asking questions. And a lot of people just, and that's what frustrates me with it, is like there's so much, like you said earlier, there's so much evidence proving that there's something out there, and yet they continue to just brush it aside.
They don't feel like any of the witnesses are credible. I mean, but the sheer volume, and they're not aware of the sheer volume.
Exactly.
I'm assuming that that's the case.
We have to be careful there, because people sometimes make the mistake in that a large volume of evidence is somehow equating volume with quality.
Yeah.
And a large volume of poor evidence is still poor evidence. That's why I jump at, you know, some of the things apparently that you've done that Reba was telling me about that I want to follow up on. So some of the stuff that's really intriguing.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyway. So.
Well.
Anyway.
Let me throw a couple more questions at you, just because I've been wanting to ask you these for so long. Why do you think that Sasquatch is not being filmed more or seen more, why does it just continually seem to evade detection? Yeah, elude us. I talked to Dr. Jeff Meldrum about this. He says that it's just because there's very few of them, that there's just not a lot. And so because they're rare, that explains them not being seen or discovered. But my problem with that is that I can go out into any canyon, almost any canyon I want to at night, and I can go to the right place, and I'm hearing wood knocks.
Mm.
And so if they're so rare, how am I hearing so many wood knocks? But then how are they eluding us? Do you know what I mean?
I do.
What do you think?
Well, I think he's right. Rare is a relative term. Rare, but I would add, not as rare as we're led to believe. Most sightings, well, in my experience, do not become reports.
Yeah.
Yes. The people I talk to.
That's what I was saying.
No way am I going to game warden, police. I mean, I've talked to policemen and said, "Yeah, we'll take the report." You know, I mean, that's pretty disrespectful. But I mean, that's But they've been led to that. You know, it's just like my wildlife biologist colleague. We're kind of applied workers, not so much researchers, and we look to the academics, and that's why I'm doing that. And I keep trying for conference presentations.
This is what you were.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just trying to come back to your question. Oh, yeah, about how.
So why do you think that they're eluding?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, why do you think that they're not being seen? That the evidence is difficult to get. Do you think it's just because they're rare, or was there another reason?
Well, there's that. I'm trying to think. I had a comment. I mean, what was it about rarity, about sightings not becoming rare? I don't. As I say, rare, but not as rare as we think. But you know, what do you do with the report? Like, you know, this collection I bought, they sat in a guy's shed for 20 years, and I finally tracked them. He didn't really want to sell them, but for this price, I would. Okay, yeah, there's your price. But the point is, someone needs to archive, and that's what Jeff is doing. Really good collection. But, you know, Jeff Meldrum, at least last time I was down there, he couldn't get his scientific colleagues, from down the hall to come and look at his evidence. I mean, that there is this real blockage that we have.
Okay.
No, anyway. It's going to go again. and that is going through the evidence we already have. Which I'm very slowly doing. I'm so excited. Like, it took me, taken over 2 years for me to follow up with Ori Innes to borrow his original, get cast made. I mean, I'm slow, and I'm supposed to be on top of this sort of thing. I went to a fish and game outfitters conference one time and couldn't attract any attention to the subject. But the guy said, you know, John, you need to talk to so-and-so in northeastern B.C. He's got some track cash. So I got to follow up, you know. And I have to do this on my own hook, on my own dime, on my own energy, which is not as strong as it used to be. Well, and the other thing, going through existing evidence, YouTube videos, there's some stuff out there, these clips.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
And if we had the backstory, and if we had the person speaking and looking at least semi-credible, we'd say, oh, let's put them in the maybe category, you know, but, you know, we need that backstory. But, yeah.